It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
This is VOA News. The Nigerian military says it knows the location of the abducted schoolgirls. Egyptians vote for a second day for president. I'm Victor Beatty, reporting from Washington. A top military official in Nigeria says the military knows where nearly 300 schoolgirls are being held captive by Islamist militants.
Turn out.
But Chief of Defense Air Marshal Alex Bade told reporters in Abuja Monday a military operation could be dangerous for the girls. He said, "We can't kill our girls in the name of trying to get them back." The youngsters were kidnapped in mid-April while taking exams in a secondary school in the remote northern village of Chibok. Militants from the Islamist group Boko Haram claim responsibility for the kidnappings and say they want to exchange the abducted girls for members of its group or in prison. Several countries, including the United States, are providing Nigeria with help to locate the girls. The French press agency reports suspected Boko Haram gunmen Sunday stormed the village of Waga in Adamawa State, killing at least 20 people. AFP says a second attack on a nearby village of Gublak was repelled by soldiers in the area. Egyptians are resuming voting for a second day as they select a new president. Edward Uranian reports lines formed in front of many polling stations in the capital city of Cairo amidst tight security. A Tunisian court Monday ordered the dissolution of the League for the Protection of the Revolution, a group accused of inciting violence. The group's founder denounced the ruling as political and vowed to appeal. He said the group's aims were to preserve the gains of the resolution that toppled President Zain al-Abidine Ben Ali in 2011 and reinforce the country's Arab and Muslim identity. The group has denied any wrongdoing, but an opposition leader died at one of the LPR rallies, and supporters clashed with members of the main labor union. Under an agreement to form an interim government, the LPR was slated to be dissolved. Well, it appears a long, protracted legal battle will follow last week's national election in Malawi that President Joyce Banda said was plagued with irregularities and who tried to annul it. She was overruled by the country's high court. A manual vote recount is underway, and officials say that could take up to 2 months to complete. On Friday, with about one-third of the votes tallied so far, opposition candidate Peter Mutharika, brother of the late president Bingu Wu Mutharika, held a 42-23% lead over Ms. Banda. In South Sudan, as the rainy season gets underway, aid officials are warning that hundreds of thousands displaced by conflict are exposed to the elements and the risk of disease is on the rise. According to UN reports, some 1 million people have been displaced by violence, sparked by a political and ethnic divide that began in December. The rains are expected to last until at least October and make many roads impassable. Sudan's general prosecutor on Monday barred media from reporting on the detention of a top opposition leader arrested for allegedly criticizing the government's security policy in Darfur. 78-year-old Sadiq El-Mahdi, the country's last democratically elected prime minister, leader of the Umma Party, was removed from his home on May 17. He's charged with breaching domestic security and threatening the constitution. Mr. El-Mahdi has criticized a paramilitary force known as the Rapid Support Force operating in Darfur, accusing it of rape and other human rights violations. The group is responsible to the government's National Intelligence and Security Service. Mr. El-Mahdi's party pulled out of talks with the ruling National Congress Party. That was part of President Omar al-Bashir's appeal back in January for a national dialogue aimed at resolving the impoverished North African country's problems. An opera on the life of the late South African President Nelson Mandela closed after just 3 performances for a lack of funds. Madiba, the African opera, premiered on Friday at the State Theatre in Pretoria. It was supposed to tour the entire country before moving overseas. Since his death December 5, several books and movies about Mr. Mandela's life have been published and produced, including the much-acclaimed The Long Walk to Freedom. Once again, I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone confirms its first case of Ebola.
We are not banned travel to Guinea, but the ministry have decided to restrict the movement of people, especially in these areas where these cases have originated from.
Sidi Yaya Tunis is the Director of Information and Communication at the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation. Elders of Chibok, Nigeria, expressed displeasure with the presidential committee. The outcome of Egypt's election may determine the fate of Islamists in that country. And the DRC threatens legal action against Congo-Brazzaville over the expulsion of DRC nationals.
This was a violation of our 1999 agreement with Congo-Brazzaville that no country should deport citizens of another country without informing the country of origin of those deported.
Lamba Mende is the Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister, and Zimbabwe's MDC denies its leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, is ill. Those stories, plus Mark Ouma, sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone officials say they have no plans, at least for now, to close the country's border with Guinea after a Sierra Leone woman who traveled to Guinea for a funeral died from Ebola. Guinea has been the epicenter of the deadly disease in West Africa following the death of nearly 174 people this year. Sidi Yaya Tunis is Director of Information and Communication for the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation. He tells me Guinean officials notified Sierra Leone on Monday that a Sierra Leone woman who died of Ebola had attended the funeral of a Guinean woman who had attracted Ebola and also died from it.
Received an email from the Guinean authorities today that indeed a lady traveled to Guinea for funeral of someone that died in Guinea of Ebola. She came back to Kailaun and she also died, and two other members of her family died. And today we received email, according to the Disease Prevention and Control Director from Guinea, that indeed those family members were confirmed positive for Ebola in Guinea, and that they traveled to Sierra Leone from Guinea. But unfortunately, those three members of the family had already died.
I'm sure your government has been preparing because you border Guinea and Liberia, two countries that have had cases of Ebola. Now you have a confirmed case of Ebola. What is your government doing?
Well, we have been preparing since the Ebola outbreak was reported first in Guinea in March. We set up committees. We have supplied personal protective equipment to all of these areas that we now consider the high-risk areas, especially those border districts, Kailaun, the Cambia, Pujon, and other areas. The case management team have conducted several trainings of health workers for the past 2 months on how to manage Ebola cases. The communications unit have been busy going around the country sensitizing people on preventive measures and how we can best prevent ourselves from contacting the disease and spreading the disease. We are not banned travel to Guinea, but the ministries have decided to restrict the movement of people, especially in these areas where these cases have originated from.
Gambian President Yahya Jammeh, when the cases of Ebola were reported from Guinea and Liberia, banned flights from Liberia and Sierra Leone. So your government is not planning on going that direction?
This moment, no, we haven't seen reason for that. What we have done is intensify what we call contact tracing. That is when we have some routine that people go through. Like when you come to the airport, if you are from Guinea and Liberia, you have specific forms that you fill. Our health workers are trained to take some vital signs so that when we suspect something, we'll be able to trace that particular contact. The problem is we have several crossing points between Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. So how can you close the border? Which border would you close? These are some of the questions that the government is faced with.
Sidi Yaya Tunis is Director of Information and Communication at the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Nigeria's top military official says the military knows where more than 200 schoolgirls are being held captive by Islamist militants. But Chief of Defense Staff Air Marshal Alex Bade told journalists Monday that it will be difficult to use force to rescue the girls. Meanwhile, a prominent member of the Chibok Elders Forum in Nigeria's Borno State says the Presidential Fact-Finding Committee on the abduction of the schoolgirls failed to meet with the group or visit Chibok as part of its work. Melam Shetima Donoma tells reporter Peter Clotty that he has yet to see any significant impact that the presidential committee is going to have in the attempt to bring back the abducted girls to their families.
As a person, I don't know what impact have they got to do with this. We want our girls back home. That is only what we want from the government.
You are saying that the presidential committee on the Chibok girls have not yet arrived despite promises, correct?
Yes, they have not arrived.
How long have you been waiting for them to show up?
They said they will come around 10, and I as a PTA chairman of the school, I went there around 8:30 up to 12, nobody turned. Unfortunately, after waiting for long, they said they will not come.
Did they give you the reasons why they did not come? Because I hear some of them are saying there were security reasons why they didn't show up.
Well, that one, nobody communicated to me that they didn't come because of security reasons.
As elders in Chibok, have you been meeting to put pressure on the government to do more, bring your girls back?
Yes. We are even arranging rally about this issue.
When do you plan holding this rally?
No, up to now, you know, it's a committee decision, so we didn't take the decision yet, but we surely will do it.
So will it be this week or next week?
You want to push me to the wall. I don't know the date yet.
Will it be the whole of Chibok or in Borno State?
Well, the community at home will do that.
Since these children were taken about 5 weeks ago, how are people in your community reacting to this kidnap?
We are really feeling very, very bad. Some of us, even including myself, we are feeling that we are a neglected child in the country, because this thing has never happened in any corner of the country. So why should we give up girls? Why? Because we are neglected.
Who is neglecting you?
Whose responsibility is to find these girls for us? It's the government.
But some people are saying the governor should have done more because the governor is in charge of Chibok.
Well, but as a layman, you know, Borno State is security-wise, is not under the governor.
So what is the latest development on the ground? What is the agenda?
Well, they didn't give us agenda, and I'm not a prophet that I can know what was not given to me. They would have served us with the agenda, but nobody served the community with the agenda. We at home, any group of people who say they are coming, we are very, very anxious to hear from them either they are bringing us our girls back. So any organization who said they are coming to Chibok, we are very, very anxious to see or to hear what they will tell us, or maybe they are bringing us our girls back.
Malam Shatima Dunoma is a prominent member of the Chibok Elders Forum. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Chibok in Nigeria's Borno State. Today, Tuesday, is the second and final day of Egypt's presidential election, in which former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is widely expected to win. Analysts say the Muslim Brotherhood, once the most powerful party in Egypt, may appear to be defeated and divided, but they say Islamist parties will always play a role in Egyptian politics. Heather Murdoch reports for VOA from Cairo.
For the past year, Egypt has been described in the news as polarized, with supporters of the military on one side and supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood on the other. This week marks the ultimate victory for the military, with the country's de facto leader, former Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, widely expected to be elected president. The Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamist party of ousted President Mohamed Morsi, is now banned as a terrorist organization. Wael Eskander is an Egyptian blogger who focuses on human rights and politics. He says Mr. Morsi's rule was deeply unpopular, and he says the public has not forgiven the Brotherhood.
Right now, they're still rejected by the Egyptian public because they are a threat to their own identity. They handled the time they were in power really horribly, did not bring about any change.
He says for the Brotherhood to stay relevant, it will first need to regain the public's trust. In the current political climate, he says, this largely depends on the new government's failure or success in two main areas. If the new government fails to rescue Egypt's economy or respect human rights, he says, the public may look back to the Muslim Brotherhood for support.
It will take a failure from the state for them to sympathize with them politically, because they will be the opposition they turn to when the police has arrested you, tortured you, assaulted you, and you cannot get what's rightfully yours, which is justice, through the legal channels.
Under Sisi's rule, thousands of Muslim Brotherhood members have been killed or imprisoned. Opposition groups affiliated with the Brotherhood have been banned, journalists have been jailed, and protests have been severely restricted. Mohammed Othman is a member of the political bureau of Strong Egypt, a political party that identifies with neither the military nor the Brotherhood. He says the crackdown on the Brotherhood could also empower the group. Even if the public is politically unsympathetic to the Brotherhood, he says, they are increasingly personally sympathetic. However, alliances in Egypt are shifting, with Islamist party Al-Noor and Coptic Christian leaders supporting Sisi. The Muslim Brotherhood, along with some non-Islamist parties, have called for members to boycott the elections. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 27th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. An official of the Democratic Republic of Congo says his government will take legal action against the government of Congo Brazzaville for the ill treatment of DRC nationals. According to the United Nations, more than 130,000 nationals of the Democratic Republic of Congo have been expelled from Congo Brazzaville since April this year. On Monday, two UN officials said they have received reports of physical abuse and sexual violence on the DRC nationals. DRC Information Minister Lambert Mende tells me the deportations violate a 1999 agreement between the two countries.
This was a violation of our 1999 agreement with Congo Brazzaville that no country should deport citizens of another country without informing by diplomatic way the country of origin of those deported. Of course, we do appreciate the statement by United Nations officials, though it came too late, but we think that this is a good starting, because all the international community must condemn what is being done by Congo Brazzaville to our citizens.
It seems that also Kobler is suggesting that the mass expulsions of people may be contrary to the principles of the African Charter on Human and People's Rights.
We, of course, have told Congo Brazzaville exactly what Mr. Kobler is saying. We are also preparing the complaints from our compatriots, those victims. We are compilating the damage they have suffered so as to go to the international justice so that whatever have been done be repaired, because those are human beings. They are not animals.
Of course, one would argue that the right to expel someone is the prerequisite of a particular country. So on the side of Congo Brazzaville, can we say they have the right to do that?
Of course, we don't deny that right. But they must also respect other provisions of international law and of our regional agreement. That is stating clearly that though you have the right to expel a foreigner, you must respect his human rights, you must respect his dignity, and you must respect his property. The dignity of our compatriots was not respected, and their property were looted, and themselves were tortured. Some others were killed as a government whose citizens are being tortured, and as Africans. Is something we can't be.
Zainab Bangura, who is the special representative of the Secretary General on sexual violence in conflict, is saying that they have reports alleging sexual violence being committed against your nationals before and during the expulsion.
We are scandalized by this behavior of some police officers in Congo Brazzaville. We sent this evidence to Congo Brazzaville government as well as the United Nations. And we really intend that this behavior be sued in an international court.
Lambert Mende is the Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. In Zimbabwe, the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, says it has written to the state-controlled Herald newspaper and the Zimbabwe Media Commission, complaining about what it says is reckless and misguided yellow journalism after the newspaper published a story alleging that MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai is seriously ill. The paper alleged that Tsvangirai's illness forced him not to address a party rally on Sunday. But Tsvangirai's spokesman Luke Tambo-Rinyoka says Tsvangirai did not attend the rally on the advice of his doctors, who said he needed to rest.
That is mischievous, reckless, and misguided yellow journalism. I've actually just finished writing a letter to the Herald and to the Zimbabwe Media Commission. And the Herald story itself says that we speculate, there is the word speculation in that line. We speculate that he is terminally ill, and you said to yourself, surely can a family newspaper report speculation? We are actually taking action regarding that. We are not taking it lightly. We take great exception to that kind of reportage, which is not sensitive to Mr. Tsvangirai and to his family. Like we said yesterday, Intendant Mgari was there when I addressed the journalists, that Mr. Tsvangirai is taking a rest on the doctor's orders. This idea of him being terminally ill is mischievous, to say the least. There are others we know who are seeking treatment outside the country. We have never said that they are terminally ill.
When can Mr. Tsvangirai be expected to make public appearances?
I wouldn't say exactly when. I'm not a medical doctor, but I can tell you that I've spoken with him in the morning. He sounded upbeat. His spirits sounded as if they were high. And in my own layman's assessment, I think as early as next week, he could have resumed his political program. But like I said, I'm not a doctor.
For how long has he not been feeling well?
It's for the past 2 days.
Yesterday, why did it take you long to notify the public about his absence?
We didn't take long to notify the public of his absence. We received a call and the crowd had gathered. And Mr. Chamisa actually told the gathering that Mr. Tsvangirai would not make it. And I actually took journalists aside and addressed the press conference, telling them that on the doctor's instructions, Mr. Tsvangirai could not be with us in Zimbabwe now.
Luke Tambo-Rinyoka is the spokesman for MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai. He was speaking with Jonga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe service. With more than 600 cases and nearly 200 deaths, officials are calling for greater monitoring and investigation of MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. The call came following a meeting of experts Monday in Oman. VOA's Jody Kapwa reports.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization convened the meeting of international health and veterinary authorities. Juan Lubroth is the FAO's chief veterinary officer.
It begins like an influenza, and it involves multiple organs, and the patient usually has a fever, and they could be organ failure and die. So it's a very serious disease.
MERS is caused by the coronavirus, which is found in some animals, such as camels and bats. Right now, much of the investigation is focusing on dromedary camels. But Lubroth says although the animals carry the virus, there's no evidence yet it makes them sick.
We do see that camels probably had this virus infection or something very similar, if not identical to it, for decades. But we haven't seen the spillover event before. So something has changed. Something has changed in agricultural practices or livestock production. Maybe the virus has changed a little bit. So we don't quite know how humans are becoming infected.
Cases of MERS peaked in April and May of 2013, and again during the same 2 months this year. However, it's not known why. Despite the name, the disease has been found outside the Gulf region, including North Africa, some Western nations, and in Asia. But Lubroth says the human infections were traced back to travel through the Middle East region.
So there is some risk associated there that we don't quite fully understand. But I think this highlights the importance of international travel and the spread of pathogens. Globalization, trade, climate change. These are all things that we need to keep in mind.
The FAO chief veterinary officer says experts are still trying to determine how MERS spreads.
From the animal source, we don't know. From the human source, we do see that most human cases are attributable to contact with diseased people at the hospital, at the clinic, maybe with their home, in close contact with family members. So one thing that should be recommended is good hygiene practices, particularly with those individuals that are handling animals.
Public health and veterinary officials from 11 countries attended the meeting in Oman. They recommended immediate investment in research and surveillance of animals, tighter biosecurity measures at farms and border crossings. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Burundi's Academy Kitty pipped Rwanda's Etincelles 1-0 as Kenya's AFC Leopards edged Tanzania mainland's Mbeya City 2-1 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Nile Basin Tournament in Khartoum, Sudan on Monday. Earlier over the weekend, Uganda's Victoria University pipped South Sudan's Malakia 1-0, Sudan's El Merrek thrashed Zanzibar Police 3-0 as Sudan's El Shandi outplayed Djibouti's Dikil 2-0. Meanwhile, defending champions Egypt beat Sudan 2-0 to prevail on a 5-0 aggregate in the return leg of the Orange Africa Youth Championship qualifiers on Sunday. Lesotho dismissed Angola 4-1 on aggregate. Ivory Coast beat Liberia 3-0. Malawi upset the Democratic Republic of Congo 3-1 as Congo-Brazzaville squeezed a 3-2 post-match penalty advantage over Benin after they tied 3-all on aggregate. In other matches, Togo progressed on the away goal rule notwithstanding their 4-all tie with Morocco. Zambia dismissed Mozambique 4-0. Nigeria outplayed Tanzania 6-1. Mali pipped Burkina Faso 3-2. Libya beat Tunisia 4-2. Gabon edged Rwanda 1-0. South Africa outplayed Ethiopia 3-0. Cameroon pipped Burundi 2-1. And Ghana dismissed Sierra Leone 4-1. Turning to athletics, Nigeria's Africa Youth and Junior Champion Divine Oduduru clocked 21.13 seconds to maintain his winning form in 200 meters at the 4th Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League Series meeting in Kaduna, North Central Nigeria on Saturday. On the infield, Ibrahim Blessing and Amadi Chinazom won the women's triple jump and long jump with leaps of 13.59 meters and 6.44 meters respectively. Daramola Feisayo prevailed in women's hammer with a throw of 59.27 meters. Chime Nkechi and Eziofor Kenechuku won women's and men's shot put with heaves of 14.17 meters and 16.86 meters respectively. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, May 27th.
Today's Children's Day celebration in Nigeria is on call for. What can the children celebrate with over 200 of their colleagues in bondage of the Boko Haram? It is better for the occasion to be used for prayers and fasting in respective churches and mosques, as well as homes, for their quick recovery, rather than tempting the dreaded men by going to any government field for celebration. I remain with Chef Brain John, Omanuku in Obodoran Resource, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's it for this Tuesday, May 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very nice day. Stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake. Umaru, wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.